everyone.
We're on day two of the Daily Podcast. Recording this one a little late because I had another podcast record earlier tonight, just the vicissitudes of production. And I was sort of torn between two topics. I'm sure I'll talk about both. But I decided to talk about this one today because it is relevant to this exact day. Last night, the Toho, Toho Lost World, Lost Word, not Lost World, as I thought it was for a long time, game, gotcha game for the, I guess, iPhone and Android, was released in the West, which is kind of surprising. If you listen to No Wall Scroll, you'll have heard Piss talking about the fact that it is like quite surprising that this got released because Toho is not super popular in the West, although it is a hugely hot commodity in Japan. So I wanted to like cover really quickly. So a couple of things. First, I wanted to explain what Toho was via Wikipedia. I know that's lame, but it's also kind of the top-down level that we need to talk about Toho because it is a massive, massive phenomenon. And then I wanted to talk a little bit more about something that – well, talk a little bit about the game. And then I wanted to talk about like the concept of – something I bring up on the podcast a lot, and I think I've never really talked about why I like it enough, Commedia dell'arte. So bear with me. This one I think is going to be kind of interesting. It's not too much about the gacha mechanics. I think we've talked about that a lot on No Wall Scroll and the main podcast, but maybe a little. So first off, Toho. Toho is the Toho Project is basically a shoot 'em up bullet hell video game series created by one-man Japanese Dojinsoft developer Team Shanghai Alice. So Team Shanghai Alice is... the sole member of the group, Junya Zun Ota, apologies for any pronunciation problems, independently developed and self-published the Toho Project. So when I say when you say bullet hell, right, a bullet hell is basically like, you know, your R-types, your Ikaruga, something like that, right? Toho games are like incredibly more... They're dramatically more, let me say that, aggressive, visually powerful. They're just like these, they are these massive, massive boards of like bullets flying everywhere. It is like constant mental fatigue to play them, but they're really fun. They're fantastic. And typically they are untranslated. They have these characters in them. That you don't know anything about. And until I actually talked to a friend of the show, Sean Moorhead, at Sean R. Moorhead on Twitter, I have really had no idea about Toho. I had no idea that it was anything except that, like, some of the games with it are really, really well-loved shooters. Like, let's see. So I've played... so Perfect Cherry Blossom is an interesting one. Let's see. Hidden Star in Four Seasons. You can get that on Steam. That's pretty good. But there are, from 1997 to 2021, starting with PC 98 games, there are, let's see here, 18 main games plus several .5s and .8s. The games, and this is just counting, I think, like the fighting games and bullet hell games. It starts off with Ota as a 17-year-old math student at Tokyo Denki University, developing the first five Toho games, for the NEC PC 9800. And he says 30 copies of the game were sold. So it keeps going, and basically he keeps making these games, and like, they have like very particular characters. Double Dealing character is the game. The 14th game of the series, released on August 12th, 2013. Reimu, Marissa, and Sakuya are playable characters with gameplay resembling that of 10 Desires. Reimu, Marissa, and Sakuya are all playable characters in the Toho game I'm playing now. You go back to... go back to Mystic Square, the one released in 1998. Marissa Kirasame, another character that is in there. Reimu Hakurai, another character that's in there. The amount of like the introduction of yokai and incidents in all of this. there's fantastic music. It is just this massive, massive thing, right? The plot is basically, you know, it revolves around the strange phenomena that occur in the fictional realm of Gensokyo, which is undesigned with a human village in some remote mountain in Japan. Effectively, it's just like a bunch of characters. It says like it's a large cast. You can go to list of Toho Project characters, and it is like, let's see, how many do they have? This is one of the longer Wikipedia pages I've ever seen. It's like kind of tilting me right now. But like the interesting thing about it is like it just has this incredible reach, right? Like cosplay, doujin circles, you know, like Toho counts as its own category, like its own genre, right? At this point. And like under the reception section, it says many derivative works based on Toho have been created since the release of Embodiment of Scarlet Devil, which is, let's see, Embodiment of Scarlet Devil is the sixth game. And I think it's probably the one that really, you know, got him on the map, got Zune on the map. You know, like there's a lot of derivative things. There's, you know, their doujin music, doujin anime, doujin games. The vast scope of Toho derivatives prompted commentary, noting that Toho Project became an unmissable aspect of Japanese consumer-generated media. Now, consumer-generated media I find super interesting here, right? This is a bunch of fan games, basically, right? The doujin, again, like sort of like self-created things, are activities are mostly responsible for adding original attributes to characters that Zune may not have intended. Zune, for the most part, had acknowledged, appreciated, and even encouraged these derivative works by imposing very few restrictions on the use of his works. The major restrictions are on unauthorized commercial distribution and the spoiling of endings. Proper attribution to Team Shanghai Alice is a requirement. Zune stated himself that he did not want the Toho Project's game series to be officially commercialized. And what's interesting is it's not, right? Like, a lot of this stuff is, like, very much a fan thing. Like, these characters are beloved, and it isn't commercialized in the same way that, say, like, a Mario game is, right? There's, like, this sort of, like, fan ownership of these characters that is kind of wild, right? Like, there's been a little bit, you know, a little bit of a decline. You know, it's nothing like Fate. It's nothing like, you know, it's nothing like Kantai Collection is another one that's really popular at sort of like, I'm sorry, like, conventions and stuff like that, doujin, things like that. But it is a huge project, right? And it, like, a ton of internet memes, a ton of like, the like fan-made anime, fan-made games, all sorts of that. And effectively at this point, while there's all sorts of games being made, like there's a, you know, Lotus Eaters is a manga series written by Zune, and it like, there's actually like a bunch of mangas written by Zune. There are games coming out. The most recent game is Unconnected Marketeers, which is a bullet hell in Toho, the 18th game, released on May 4th. So, you know, a week ago today. This is like the game itself is still hugely popular and hugely viable. It's just that, like, it's mostly Zune does a ton of it, and that seems to be like mainly his work, but it is also just this sense of like, constant fan production, right? And so coming to the gacha game, it's not a bullet hell, but it takes elements of that, right? And kind of like all the, it's sort of like works kind of like a JRPG sort of battle system. And all the things are these bullet battles that happen, much like you'd see in Toho games, like the bullet hell games, but it's within this sense of like, you know, you're choosing what the bullets are. So, you know, you'll pick a thing and they'll shoot, you know, like 50 missiles out. It's like, it's fun to look at. But it's not mechanically at all the same. However, it has the same sort of like joy in the world. It has this sense of like investment in the characters. You know, like any gacha, it wants to encourage you to keep spending money so you can get your favorite characters. And it really, like, the writing in it's pretty solid. Like, it's a fun game. Like, it's fun to play. It's fun to see the plot generate, which is not true of all gacha games. Like, I don't feel that way about, like, say, Sino Atlas, the Yoko Taro gacha. I find the story, like, completely bad in that. It kind of sucks. And comparing that to Toho, which is a much less self-serious game, the story is gripping and it's fun and it, like, it makes you care about these characters. And what I think is, like, super interesting about that, right, is that these characters are, as I've said a million times, just, like, these sort of, like, loose fan-based characters who are allowed to exist because Zune doesn't have, like, strict copyright, right? And so why this leads me to think about Commedia dell'arte. So Commedia dell'arte, I'll pull up Wikipedia, although I know a little bit, I know a little more about that. So Commedia dell'arte is also known as Comedy of the Profession. It's an early form of professionalized theater originating from Italy and popular in Europe from the 16th to the 18th century. Often called Italian comedy in English, Commedia alla Marchera, Commedia improviso, Commedia dell'arte all'improvviso. It's a form of theater characterized by mass types. And basically, like, it's improvisational. It's based on little sketches. There's pantomime in there, right? There's a Arlecchino, a Harlequin. There's, like, jokes and stuff like that. But the characters in the Commedia typically represent fixed social types and stock characters, such as foolish old men, devious servants, military officials full of false bravado. They're exaggerated real characters, like the know-it-all doctor, one of the tropes, Il Dottore, a greedy old man called Pantalone, perfect relationship like the Innamorati, so two people in love. And so basically you have, like, a short list of characters that show up all the time. You have Arlecchino, Pulcinella, who's like a servant. Arlecchino is like a servant as well, but kind of like colorful and fun, looking like a Harlequin. Pulcinella, baggy white outfit. Il Dottore, the head of the household. Il Capitano, an indigent loner in a military uniform, making fun of the military. Innamorati, high class hopeless lovers. Pantalone, older wealthy man. Tartaglia, and if anyone's been playing Genshin Impact, stuttering salesman. A large felt hat and enormous cloak, Colombina, perky maid, and Piero, who, if you're a Cowboy Bebop fan, one of the creepier villains in that, the sort of clown character that shows up in the, let's see if I can find, late 20th century, yeah, films, television, and anime. Let's see, films, television, and anime, where's Piero show up? Piero shows up in... Well, he shows up in Cowboy Bebop as a fight against Spike. Anyway, oh yeah, so Shinichiro Watanabe, the Pierre LeFou references both the character and the Godard film. Right, there's a Godard film called Pierre LeFou. It's like also in Smile Precure, which is another interesting thing. Because my daughter's watching it, so it's something that I see a lot. He shows up, but also in, like, a ton of film. Bergmar has a Piero. Like, these characters show up a lot, right? And that's just Piero. You could click on Il Dottore, right? Il Dottore shows up in, all over the place. Oh, Il Dottore is cuckolded. There's a traditional one-third mask for him. I would say Piero and Arlecchino are probably the most popular ones. But Commedia dell'arte is not about characters, right? It's about these, ten characters that show up all the time, right? And there are others too, sure, like Pierrette, girl Piero, Il Capitana, that's not one, Pedrolino, Sandrone, Scaramuccia, also known as Scaramouche, which you may know from the Queen song and the Donald Trump administration. Hey, I'm gonna get on Colbert now. Which you may know from the Queen song. There's this quality of, consistent types as opposed to specific characters. And what I find interesting in the Commedia is the same thing I find interesting in Toho Project, is that, like, the plenitude of types as opposed to the sort of invention of characters really produces something that is, like, it 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 captures your imagination and even your heart in a certain way, right? You care more about these characters because they are types. You care much more about Pierrot because Pierrot is like a clown that keeps reappearing over and over and over again, which is like troubling and fascinating and funny and scary. You care more about like, you know, these like Marissa in Toho Project because like you've seen her show up in the same shooters over the past like two decades, right? Like it's this sense of repetition that has at its core a buy-in, right? Like a buy-in that is knowing what the genre is, who's in the genre, and what their basic, I don't know, emotional tropes are. So you can appreciate when the playwright or the writer or the game producer or the mangaka or the person doing the anime or whatever, when they stick to form and when they divert from form, right? And that maybe is the most interesting thing, right? Like when we're thinking about video games as these, you know, trying to become movies or trying to become novels or something like that, there's something so simple about imagining a type and then imagining that type doing something different. Like what is, I think the best level in Mario Odyssey was New Donk City. New Donk City is great because it's just, what if Mario was in New York City? Like what if Mario was just like in a city? That's a great question. And Mario's just a type at this point, so you get to kind of experience it. And it's fun. It's a neat question to ask and a neat question to see answered. Similarly, like what do the Toho people look like if they're in a gacha game? What does Pierrot look like if he meets Il Dottore in like Florence as opposed to, you know, like Naples, as opposed to Paris, as opposed to, you know, the outer space, right? Like these characters have particular elements to them in both Toho and Commedia that require a sort of knowledge and not veracity, but like fidelity, let's say, like a kind of fidelity. You can do it wrong. And if you do it wrong, if you don't hit the note right, the whole thing's going to fall apart. And I'm sure there's a million bad Commedias and a million bad Toho fan works that don't hit the note right. But when you do hit the note, you have like a huge backlog of history to draw from. Years and years and years of emotional resonance that really makes it work, even if it's something that is, you know, on its face, kind of like just a joke or a simple satire or like a fun game or a fun fantasy story, right? That resonance of history and the playing with types, that's something that Commedia and theater could do very well. And it's something that games actually do quite well too, that we don't really see other than in Toho, because of the, you know, the vicissitudes of copyright and profit. Right. Anyway, I thought that was kind of interesting. Thanks for letting me work through it with you. And I hope you are enjoying these daily podcasts. I will talk to you tomorrow. And you know, if you don't have sort of a gambling problem in your heart, and if you do, don't pick these games up. They absolutely 100% will not make you happy. If you don't have that, Toho Lost Word is on iOS and Android, and it's good. It's fun. It's like it's a neat little gacha game. If I haven't convinced you to play Arknights yet, maybe try this one. You know, as long as you don't have a gambling problem. If you do have a gambling problem, do not pick him up. You know, go play like one of the Toho bullet hells or something like that instead. They're not free, but they're also, you know, this one isn't free if you have an impulse in your heart. Anyway, thanks everyone, and I will talk to you tomorrow.